This is KZSC. My name is John Malkin, and the name of this program is Transformation Highway. Today you'll hear an interview with Alicia Kuhl. She is currently running for a seat on the Santa Cruz City Council for the election in November 2020. Alicia Kuhl, K-U-H-L, is one of nine women candidates running for four city council seats this year. The other candidates are Sandy Brown, Kayla Kumar, Kelsey Hill, Martine Watkins, Sonia Bruner, Maria Cadenas, Shebra Kalantari-Johnson, and Elizabeth Conlin. Alicia Kuhl works as a case manager helping formerly homeless individuals retain their housing. She's focused on creating more low-income and affordable housing options in Santa Cruz and supporting mental health and substance abuse services in the city. Alicia Kuhl is the mother of three young children and has a disabled spouse. She is president of the Santa Cruz chapter of the California Homeless Union, and Alicia and her family are themselves homeless. They currently live in an RV. Here now is Santa Cruz City Council candidate Alicia Kuhl. First, tell me a little about yourself and just where you grew up and how long you've been in Santa Cruz, and about your family.
Yeah, so I'm 41. I grew up in the Campbell area, visiting Santa Cruz pretty frequently as a child. It was kind of my area to go to, kind of a retreat. I grew up kind of in the group home and foster care system. Both of my parents had substance abuse issues, and sadly, they continue to have substance abuse issues to this day. So I kind of grew up taking care of my brother and sister, going in and out of the foster care system, really being kind of an impacted individual early on. I was a child of the system, and I don't think that my parents necessarily either sought out or received enough, I guess, treatment to get better. And so I continued through that system. As an adult, I've been in the Santa Cruz area for about 15 years. I had an abusive relationship for a while that I was able to get out of. During that time, something that I did to sort of escape from dealing with that was I went to online school, and I was able to attain a business degree. And so that's kind of helped me. It was sort of an outlet for me to escape that situation. I've since divorced, and I have a new partner now. I have three small children, and so I'm a full-time working mother. Part of what I do for my life goal, actually, is to help people that have experienced homelessness and who have been impacted by oppression, injustice, issues of the system in general. And so I work with people who were formerly homeless, living in a permanent supportive living establishment called Second Street Studios in San Jose. And I help individuals retain their housing, and I provide case management to them. And so that's one thing that I do to give back, because I know how difficult it can be to face challenges. When you're growing up in the system, or if you've had any type of challenges, if you've lost your housing, it can be just extremely difficult to repair that. And the ripple effect and damage that it causes can just cause so many complex issues. And so it's my life goal to help people get through that and to better their lives. And I also work towards policy change, because a lot of these things can really be rectified through policy change. And so that's kind of like the way I grew up, kind of what led me to do what I do. I mean, there's a lot more to it, but that's kind of a simple version of my growing up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Tell me more about your experience being homeless, and how that happened and how you're dealing with that. You have said that the lack of access to housing has opened your eyes to the failures of the system and has spurred your advocacy and your life path, the things you're talking about, wanting to change policies. Tell me about being homeless. And obviously, it's pretty unusual that someone who's unhoused has the courage to run for city council. I think it's really rare that that happens. How is that going, being homeless and running for city council? And how is that being homeless in Santa Cruz?
Well, it's definitely challenging. So I lost my house 2 years ago. I was renting in the Santa Cruz Mountains from an individual who was renting units that had been deemed illegal for habitation. He'd been ordered since 2013 not to rent these units, and I guess the county has demolition permits for these units and just waiting on funding and, you know, is going to demolish these 8 units in the mountains one by one. And so I came home one day and my down the hill neighbor's home was being demolished. And it really freaked me out. My whole family, there were sheriffs there, county workers. We were kind of like, what's going on here? And the landlord was dishonest with us and told us that the county was making a mistake. He'd been going through some issues. I had to actually call the county myself and find out that he was being dishonest and that he wasn't supposed to rent these units. So I asked him for compensation, which would include my rent money back and our deposit, just so that we would be able to move. And he declined. He did not return any of our money. And we were in a situation. There's not a lot of support for tenants in that situation when the landlord has done them wrong. Really, the only recourse is civil small claims court, which can take a long time to recover your money. I found out that this particular landlord has over 30 cases with other tenants who have gone through a similar issue with him, and he never paid any of them back. And a couple of them even won judgments, but they still failed to recover the money. So I ended up using an insurance settlement that I had from 2 years prior. Someone ran into my Prius and flipped our car over, and my hand actually took a lot of physical damage. But I used the money for that to buy an RV so that my family would have basic access to a toilet, a stove so that we could cook our food. And so really being homeless would be sort of less impactful on us as it could be. And I immediately noticed trying to find a safe parking spot for my RV was a challenge. There's a big target towards people experiencing homelessness in Santa Cruz. Police don't treat you very good at all. They don't help you if something's happened to you. I was targeted several times, accused of being a drug dealer just for parking my vehicle somewhere. Had the police asked to speak to me, my children, all sorts of different things that I really find unnecessary just for parking an RV. And so I just really noticed in Santa Cruz the humongous lack of support for people experiencing homelessness and the stigma and treatment that people get. And so it kind of sparked me into becoming a homeless advocate and activist. Shortly thereafter, when I lost my home, I realized that my good friend Desiree had lost her Section 8 apartment and was living at the Ross camp. And so that really bothered me as well. She was living great in an apartment for a couple of years. She complained about the cockroaches. Well, she didn't complain. She asked for help about the cockroaches. And she was evicted. And she wasn't able to find another place and ultimately ended up living in the Ross camp. The city dispersed the Ross camp, not offering everybody adequate shelter. And my friend Desiree ultimately ended up camping in the Poganip and was killed almost a year ago today by a fallen tree in the Poconet. So it hits very close to home for me when people here in Santa Cruz are experiencing homelessness and not getting the services that they need because I look at them, and many of them are my friends and family members. And so the policy changes that I'm trying to get done are really personal. It's personal to me. I'm seeing the suffering firsthand. And so, do you have any other questions regarding that?
Thank you, Alicia. It's just terrible seeing the unhoused people of Santa Cruz being pushed from one spot to another, away from the Ross camp to the city designated camp past the tannery for a while, and then people removed from different places around town by the post office, tents and blankets being confiscated, people being arrested. There's also the reality that some of those places, there's piles of trash, and people are upset about that. I don't know if you have more to say about possible solutions for housing people. One thing too, I mean, it's pretty interesting watching during the pandemic and then now the fires in the surrounding area, how a lot of people had to evacuate and get really quick alternative housing and aid, and they got it. And it seems right. It seems ironic that there's been years where there's 1,500 people in Santa Cruz who really need that kind of help, and they haven't gotten it. Do you have any more thoughts about how this has not been working, the you know, supposed help for homeless in Santa Cruz, and some solutions?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, it's safe to say that I'm against criminalization of people experiencing homelessness, and that's what I see happening here in Santa Cruz historically for a long time now. And it is interesting. You did point out something. You know, we have about what I've been, the point of time census anyways tells us that we have about 2,000 homeless people in our county area and city combined, and about 800 in the city alone. And you're right. For a long time, they've been, you know, shifted around from area to area. Their belongings have been thrown away. They end up in landfills, which is extremely bad for the environment. Nonprofits are constantly trying to foot the bill to keep people getting survival gear so that they're not outside with no tent and no blanket as well. And then now we have, you know, these multiple crises, I guess, in a row. And now that we have the fires, it has been interesting to me that we have dozens of services that are suddenly available for people. And that's great. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have that, but we have all these evacuation centers now. We have the Seventh-day Adventist Church. We've opened the fairgrounds. They opened the Civic Center, the Kaiser Arena, all of these areas for people to park their vehicles who now are recently newly experiencing homelessness, but nothing for the people that, minus the AFC Safe Parking Program, which is very minimal and high barrier. We haven't had anything for people experiencing homelessness previously. And so it is really, really upsetting. At the same time, it's good that people are getting the services that they need right now. As far as solutions, I think that there's multiple solutions. I mean, I can talk about solutions all day long. For one thing, we are not utilizing available areas that we have now. We have city-owned properties that we could build 100% affordable units on. The city, instead of paying, you know, all this money and all these programs, they could buy a couple of the hotels that Project Room Key is currently utilizing to place people temporarily. I know that other cities are talking about doing that, acquiring a couple of the hotels. We don't have a property vacancy tax that we could use. We could put some of that money into programs for people experiencing homelessness. I know that right now One of the big things that's happening is a talk about the police budget. The police have admitted on several occasions, and the city manager as well, that over half of their budget and a good deal of the parks and recreation and public works budget goes directly towards people experiencing homelessness, and that those are the, at least half of the police calls that they're getting are for those reasons. And the police are not trained. They're not social workers. They are not trained in de-escalation. They are not substance abuse technicians. So they really should not be handling those phone calls. I think that if we took at least 25% of their budget and we reallocated it into trained professionals that were trained in dealing with those issues, that the police calls would go down and we would see actually a culture shift in Santa Cruz. The police could handle violent crimes and the crime and the things that they were trained to do, and people who were experiencing crisis would have the services that they needed. And I think that if that happened, along with utilizing all of the options for affordable housing and really paying attention to making sure that we're not looking at slightly under market rate housing, but actually low and affordable, low income housing according to the HUD guidelines, so that truly impacted people have units that are available to them. I think that if we did all that, we would really see a change in Santa Cruz. And that's why I really feel like we need strong leaders that have political courage to actually make these things happen. And I think we also need to revisit Measure M and look at rent control again.
I want to ask you just a couple more things about the homeless situation, and then I want to ask you about some other things about the city council and other candidates running and working within a city manager run city, which can be difficult for activists to do, for anyone to do. Would you tell me, you know, say a little more about the police and this movement, Black Lives Matter, and the movement to defund and abolish policing and create something new is really huge now, bigger than probably ever before. It's really interesting and strange that it's during the pandemic, but here we are and we're doing it. And there's quite a movement to create something like they have in Eugene, the CAHOOTS program, which does take about a quarter of the emergency calls away from the police there. In Santa Cruz, the police chief recently said that they feed the homeless. They hand out sandwiches to the homeless population. In the meantime, Keith McHenry and a host of volunteers are doing Food Not Bombs and really feeding people. I'm curious, you know, what you think about who right now is really serving people that are homeless and need mental health care and need people who are poor in Santa Cruz and who are really not helping. There's this popular notion that people that are homeless want to be homeless. So I wonder if you can comment on both those things. Who is genuinely helping? And I know that you work with the Santa Cruz Homeless Union too, the Relief Center. Who is really helping? And what about the ideas that people have about homeless people? I don't know if you have some stories about people, you know, other people that are unhoused in Santa Cruz.
Sure. I actually am the president of the Santa Cruz chapter of the California Homeless Union, and I work closely with Food Not Bombs. I've been personally working 7 days a week at the disaster relief station that we started as a response to the COVID-19 pandemic, but it actually has turned into sort of COVID-19 pandemic / disaster relief, you know, from the fires and just general crisis relief. We provide everything there. We provide hot food, to-go food. clothing, hygiene items. I've been really diligently working for at least the past couple of weeks now, since, you know, the fires and stuff, to try to get some donations and stuff for the homeless that were homeless before, as well as, like, Food Not Bombs. We serve everybody at Food Not Bombs, so we don't ask, you know, how you became homeless. If you are homeless, even if you're not homeless and you're just struggling, you can come there and get food and supplies. And so it's been a really great resource. It's on the corner of Front and Laurel, and it's operating 7 days a week. That's definitely a program that helps people. What I've noticed, too, is that Food Not Bombs helps some of the people that cannot go anywhere else for food. We have a mental health crisis here in Santa Cruz, and people are not getting the services that they need in regards to that. And so Food Not Bombs is such a lovely, beautiful place because it's one of the last places that people can go to get food and not be turned away. And so I've witnessed people experiencing a mental health crisis there and still get food, which is something that you can't do at other places. I've seen people get kicked out of the soup kitchen, get kicked out of the Housing Matters facility because of making noise, yelling, having a mental health outburst. I've heard of people getting kicked out of the Benchlands encampment that's currently going on for throwing a water bottle and yelling. And so these are things that we are kind of used to dealing with, and we still service people. So I think it's very important to have low barrier programs so that people can still get their needs met, even if they are having issues, even if they aren't a, you know, perfect person. I think that the police department here does a lot of, like, show, and so does our mayor, unfortunately, Mayor Justin Cummings. When he and our police chief took a knee right in front of the anti-homeless fence that they had erected just like weeks prior, I found that to be kind of disturbing. I think that it's very performance related and sort of like publicity oriented when it comes to what they're really willing to do here in Santa Cruz. I know that a mural, which I volunteered to paint, is going to be erected, a Black Lives Matter mural, which is great. And they took a knee, which was great too in some respects. But the real issue is the policy change and being willing to change the way that things are working. And so by painting a Black Lives Matter mural, but not actually listening to the demands of the community regarding the way that we are doing policing here, I don't think it's doing the police department any favors. I don't think it's addressing the concerns of the community that you were talking about, the concerns that are very much growing all across the nation right now. And I don't think that our mayor and our police chief is doing a good job of addressing those concerns and actually implementing policy changes. In fact, just recently, they got more money. And so it's kind of shifting the other way. And so I feel like a lot of times here in Santa Cruz, the community isn't heard. Like, and that's why I want a city council that will listen to what the community is saying, listen to our voices. And I mean, they are public servants. They're supposed to go with the best interests of the community and not ignore the community. So I feel like that's important. Something that needs to be mentioned.
Mm-hmm. So how do you envision it being on the city council? It, you know, some of the other city
without a progressive majority, I don't see anything happening, which is why I hope we really get more like-minded progressive individuals so that we could really make the changes.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think are those people?
I am hoping that I will get a city council seat next to Kelsey Hill, Sandy Brown, and Kayla Kumar.
You're listening to KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org. My name is John Malkin. This is Transformation Highway. You're listening to an interview with Santa Cruz City Council candidate Alicia Kuhl. Tell me, what you think about the what might be difficult about being on the city council. What I've heard for years and years from people who get on there is sometimes if the mayor is not part of the progressive group, they might set the agendas for public meetings and closed meetings and not allow input from other city council people. And therefore, they would completely leave off things or discuss things in closed session that some people would prefer are discussed in open session. The other aspect of the city of Santa Cruz being a city manager-run city where, I mean, even now the city manager is putting out these executive orders, for example.
Can I be honest about that? If I get a seat on the city council, one of my first proposals will be to get a new city manager. I don't think that our current city manager has served us very well and has done what's best for us. I find it very offensive, the recent order against our street vendors. And so one of my proposals, which I've said multiple times, would be firing the city manager and getting a new city manager. So that's to answer one of your questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think it definitely would be a challenge that the mayor, because I noticed that over the past 2 years, the mayor not agendizing things that other council members would like or have asked for. I heard Drew say that multiple times. And so I definitely see that that's been a previous challenge. But like I said, that's something I don't lack political courage. So I will tackle all of these things head on.
That's great to hear. And I hope you get elected, and I hope you do that. Getting rid of the city manager has been a goal of a number of city council people, and it has not manifest. And, you know, in the meantime, with the city manager having a lot of power, the staff people of the city, who you would think logically they would be working hand in hand with city council people, but not necessarily. Like Parks and Rec and the police department, they often are proposing things and pushing through ideas. For example, a dramatic example, the police getting an armored personnel carrier, Bearcat, they push that through and they get as much time as they want at city council meetings. Meantime, city council people and citizens don't get all the time they want, and stuff gets pushed through like that. So the staff is even difficult to work with as a city council person sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I see all these as potential challenges that I would have to work really, really strongly to get the changes that we need, given all those challenges. But I understand what you're saying, and I, too, have kind of followed how things have been previously done here. So I am aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I wanted to ask you about fundraising. I'm not even sure, you know, things are so weird and upside down since the pandemic and the fires. I'm guessing that city council candidates, you mentioned a few of them, and they're all women, which is intriguing. I don't think that people are probably raising the amounts of money that are usually raised for signs and mailers. Maybe they are, I don't know. But I've always thought it's a bit of a waste of money to raise $20,000, $30,000, 10 people doing that every couple of years. I really propose this idea that if you're running for city council and you really feel the need to raise money, why not raise money for a specific need and use that money to fulfill that need in the community rather than just printing signs and posters? What are you doing about raising money as a city council candidate?
Well, it is a bit challenging. I've only raised, I think, a little over $1,000. And our big expenditure so far has been yard signs. I have a GoFundMe, and I've kind of advised people, like, on there, because it is a little bit tricky. Like, you have to donate amounts under 400, and if you donate over 100, you know, we need to know your address and your occupation, because we have to report all that in that file. But because of COVID-19, it has been a little bit challenging. I like your idea. I actually do that with the Homeless Union. It's separate from my campaign, but I do what you're saying in other avenues. I've been kind of noticing issues that are here in Santa Cruz. And so, like, one thing I've done is I have a GoFundMe to help homeless individuals register their vehicles. Like, if they have a vehicle, I've helped multiple people now pay for their car registration so that the police can't give them tickets. One thing the police like to do, like I said, is target people who look like they're living in their vehicles. And oftentimes they'll come upon these individuals and they won't have proper registration, or they'll have too many tickets. And that will enable the police to ticket them further or tow them away. So I've tackled that problem head on by helping people register their vehicles. I have another thing going on, Fire Relief Fund. So whenever there's a gap in, like, donations, I can go and buy a whole bunch of socks or a whole bunch of tents or whatever it is that we need. So I've kind of been trying to do that, like, handle specific needs through other avenues, but separate from my campaign.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I really appreciate the work you're doing, and it's kind of amazing because you don't live in a house and you're managing, and you have three children. You know, I've
RV
been...
squad.
Say that again.
We're the RV squad.
Yeah, the RV squad. You know, Abby Samuels has done a good job documenting and trying to intervene when the police are towing vehicular homes, and also this thing with the executive order banning these boardwalk vendors. You just mentioned that. I don't know if you want to say anything more about the removal of those vendors' items and the arrest of a couple of them. What do you think about all that?
Well, I think it was terrible. I think it's traumatizing to them and their families. They're just out there trying to make a living. I feel like it was a racist executive order to put forth anyways, because the reason behind it is just not even justifiable. They're not causing a health concern, especially in terms of COVID-19. A lot of them are out there selling things like face masks. And I just felt it's just disturbing to target them when you have an entire beach full of people, you know, no social distancing, no masks. I mean, I just don't understand how you could target the beach vendors when you have, you know, restaurants all over the place, everything going on at the boardwalk, people everywhere, and you're targeting the beach vendors. It seemed very transparently racist and unfair to me.
Mm-hmm. Hey, is there anything we didn't mention that you want to mention? And also, I think that you, on top of everything, I think you're currently studying for a law degree. Is that right?
I am. That's just something I've been doing for quite some time now. I've been studying kind of under our general counsel, Anthony Prince. I was able to do pro se, like the lawsuit to stop the closure of the Ross camp, which was successful temporarily. So, I mean, these things definitely interest me. Someday it's kind of in my distant future, I think, but I would like to take the bar and maybe, you know, become an attorney that can help people. Because I also don't think that we have enough attorneys on our side in these types of situations that are able to fight for people who don't have a lot of money, for one thing. And so I would like to eventually be in a position where I can do that for people.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. And anything you want to mention that we didn't touch on?
I don't think so. I mean, there are obviously probably a dozen things I could talk about all day long. One thing is the growth of UCSD. I don't think that we should be focusing on, you know, more growth until we have services. I know that UCSD students also have struggled. I know that they've asked for cops to get off campus. I know that this, I'm familiar with the snail movement, but people experiencing homelessness also don't have permission to park on the university so that they can have a safe place to sleep when they're studying. And so, you know, I really feel like we need to have services for everybody, and we need to make sure that we have adequate housing and transportation and things like that. So that's all. I just wanted to mention what was going on specifically at UCSD as well.
Mm-hmm. There is lots going on.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alicia. Thanks for spending time with me. Thank you for running for city council, and I wish you well. I hope you get on there. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts about all the candidates are women running for the city council?
I mean, I think it's great. I think it's great. That's all I can really say. I mean, I think it's wonderful. Women have a strong sense of compassion and leadership and problem-solving skills, and so I'm rooting for all of us. But at the same time, like I said, I would love to have a seat next to Sandy, Kayla, and Kelsey.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good, good lineup. Good luck in that effort. Thanks again for making time, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening, and I appreciate you.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. You've been listening to an interview with Santa Cruz City Council candidate Alicia Kuhl. This is KZSC 88.1 FM.